I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday. You've heard of the Big Bang, right? Do you know who came up with that idea? Well, it was actually a Catholic priest, George Lemaitre, who was also an astronomer and a physics teacher. And he's just one of the many religious scientists profiled in my next guest's new book, Why Science Does Not Disprove God. In the book, he makes the case that science and God are not incompatible, as some atheists might have you believe. And in fact, he says science has so many unanswerable questions beyond the realm of modern science. So how can we hope to settle the question of a creator with science? Amir Gzel is the author of Why Science Does Not Disprove God. He's also a research fellow in the history of science at Boston University. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thank you. Great to be here. Great. So I thought we will settle the issue here today.
Oh, yeah. We'll settle that small little issue. We'll settle it. We actually have an excerpt of your book on sciencefriday.com/science and God if people want to read a little bit about it. And you've been here so many times. We've talked about science and physics and all kinds of topics. This seems to be off the camera, out of sight for you, at least as far as the other topics that you've talked to us about. Why did you write this book?
Well, there are two reasons. One of them an academic one. The other one is a personal one. So the academic, I was up late one night 2 years ago and surfing the net, and I saw that there's a new book called The Universe From Nothing by Lawrence Krauss. And I immediately bought it, and I filled it with notes about everything I disagree with and decided I probably should write a book saying why I believe that the universe didn't come out all on its own out of nothingness. That just doesn't happen. And then I went to a conference in Mexico where Richard Dawkins was speaking, and I was speaking there too. I brought my daughter, who's a science student, with me, and she asked Dawkins a question, which seemed like an innocuous question, like, how do you reach certain conclusions? And he just said to her, you can believe in unicorns if you like, turned his back and walked away. And I thought, I think I should write that book after all. Wow. And that's, I realized that atheists really have a very strong presence now in the media and claim that science has disproved the existence of God. And I thought that I disagree with that. Science, to me, is a wonderful thing that teaches us a lot about the world. But what we learn, for example, requires so much high mathematics, extremely complex mathematics, pages and pages of mathematics just to write down the Lagrangian of the standard model, for example, or the Higgs mechanism, which I've studied a lot. How can we say that there's no God behind it? It seems so intricate, so complex, so well-structured. Just because we learn about it doesn't mean that there's no God. It's not that we haven't learned enough. I don't think we haven't reached the point where we can disprove the existence of God. It's just that the more we learn about science, the more we see that there's structure in the universe that is so unlikely to occur on its own. For example, Roger Penrose showed, based on one parameter only, that the emergence of our universe, the universe that supports life, based on one parameter, and that's the entropy, has a probability of 1 to the 10 to the 10 to the 123, a number as close to zero as you want. It's fantastic odds.
But people say if there are an infinite number of universes, the multiverse theory now, right? We happen to be in a sweet spot that maybe we are the only universe that has the ability to support life out of all those other billions of universes. You don't buy that argument.
Well, let me ask you, Ira, if it takes a God to create one universe, how many gods does it take to create an infinite multiverse? I mean, it just makes God more omnipotent to create an infinite set of universes. I mean, why would they all exist, all these infinite universes, just to give the atheist or the scientists who believe that a parameter space from which to choose a universe where all the conditions are right, the electron has the right mass and the right charge and the dark energy has the right level and so on. Why?
But science never really could prove the existence of God or disprove the existence of God. You really can't do that with science, can you?
Right, that's what I tried to say in the book.
I mean, the same way that religion or anything of faith is taken as a matter of faith. In a different vein.
Well, the multiverse is a matter of faith, because we don't know about other universes except for our own. Mm-hmm. So, and scientists talk about things like Boltzmann brains out in the universe. To me, it's like angels. It becomes a matter of faith one way or another.
So you seem like it ticked off and fed up at the same, at the same time that you don't, you certainly believe in science. Right.
Yes, I believe I speak for science in the book. In fact, I say in the preface that I wrote this book to defend the integrity of science. I've talked to so many scientists, interviewing them for all my books.
Right.
I've studied science in such depth that to me, to say, hey, there's no God, proof is science, is just not right. That's not what science is about either.
Right. It's not about proving or disproving God in any one way.
Right.
And so... So you take issue with people who think you can't believe in science and God at the same time, because there are a lot of scientists we've interviewed who say, you know, it doesn't affect. I have a science box. I have a supernatural God box, and they don't interfere with each other.
Right. I thought there was a minority view, because most of the scientists I spoke with, especially physicists, mm-hmm. say they're atheists.
Well, there are enough scientists around who do believe
right.
in both of them. You know, it's
right.
not unheard of.
Right.
There's been some very famous scientists who do that.
Good. Yeah, I've interviewed some of them, actually, who are believers, but mm-hmm. maybe they don't talk about it very much.
And you mention in your book Einstein, especially.
Right.
You point out Einstein, the great iconic figure, that he did believe in God. But his belief was not in a personal God, right? That God did not control things that happen in your personal life.
Right. And not only that, he didn't like organized religion more than anybody does. He thought religions are very flawed, but he had so many statements about God that it's hard for me to say that he didn't believe in some kind of God, Spinoza's God, the God of nature, something like that. And I read a lot of his writings, for two of my books had to do with Einstein. And my father was was an expert in German. He helped me translate some of Einstein's letters that nobody had seen before at that point. And even in those letters, he spoke about God. At one point, there's a letter that I translated with my father where he says, Einstein wrote to an astronomer by the name of Freundlich, and he says, what a shame that God didn't give us a planet larger than Jupiter, because he was looking for the warping of space-time as light passes by a planet. Of course, this was done with the sun later, mm-hmm. with Eddington. And he said, subtle is the Lord, but malicious is not, and I want to know God's thoughts, the rest are details.
Yeah.
He talked about God all the time. And in German, it's der Herr Gott, you know, make it even larger than just saying God in English.
His most famous quote, I think, is, I believe in Spinoza's God, who reveals himself in the lawful harmony of all that exists, but not in a God who concerns himself with the fate and doings of mankind.
Absolutely right. And yeah. I think it's hard to believe in that other God.
Let's see if we can take a phone call or two. Our number, 844-724-8255. Let's go to Tom in Norwich, Vermont. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that science is in the business of proposing testable claims and then testing them over and over. With a book title like this, that seems more in the realm of clickbait and book sales and Templeton Foundation gifts. What I'd like to know is, how do you define a God that you can make testable claims about? Because a God that is utterly vague is also not provable or disprovable. I think there are very few atheists who claim to be able to disprove God, whether they're scientists or not.
Well, maybe the vagueness in the definition is the whole thing. I mean, God means different things to different people. All I'm saying in the book is that atheists, the new atheists, scientific atheists, claim that science disproves any kind of God. The universe came about all on its own. That's all I'm saying is not true. Because if you get to the physics, there's always something called quantum foam that predates the universe or something like it. And so the universe didn't come out all on its own without the necessity of a God. And that's what they're talking about, really. They're not mm-hmm. talking about the God of Genesis or the God of Scripture. They're talking about a God that created the universe. The whole point of the book, Universe from Nothing, is you don't need a God. The universe just appears by itself. That's just simply not true.
Well, they give some reasons for how the universe came about, but I hear what you're saying, unless I'm wrong about it, is that there's no that you can believe in science and you can still believe in God at the same time.
Unless there will come a time where somebody will give us proof that there is no God, then I would be the first to accept it.
And how could science do an experiment like our caller was saying? Well, it would be impossible to create an experiment that disproves God.
Well, somebody wrote in one of the comments on a review of my book, there are 1,400 comments, and one of them said, you can't prove that something doesn't exist, and that's simply not true. I wrote a book about Fermat's Last Theorem. Fermat's Last Theorem says that there are no solutions in whole integers for a particular equation, and I can prove that, or it has been proven by a very good mathematician, Andrew Wiles, that it is true for all integers. So there are mathematical proofs that are negative that can be made. So it really, there are things that we can prove that we don't maybe realize that we can prove.
Do you think that in writing this book, you're going to become distracted from your main, you know, you wrote this book, it seems like you had something on your chest, you wanted to get it off, you didn't like the way that people talked to your daughter, and you didn't like the way that people were talking about people who believe in religion. You wrote the book. Do you want this to have a life of its own because it could distract you from what you really like to write about, which is science.
Absolutely. I remain a science writer.
Right.
I remain devoted to science. I remain a lover of science. This was something that I knew I was taking a big chance with. I think it antagonizes some people, but I haven't lost any Facebook friends, so I don't know. That tells me something.
Have you gotten more speaking engagements now to come and talk about
that? Well, I came to speak on your show, which is nice.
But you always come when you have wonderful books that we talk about anyhow.
Thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
So, let's talk about fine-tuning. What is it that we might lead someone to the conclusion that there might be someone pulling the string, so to speak, in the universe?
So you can solve it two ways. One way, the fine-tuning. So let me explain. Fine-tuning means that the parameters of the universe are finely tuned, meaning if they were slightly off of what they are, even one of them, we wouldn't be here talking about them. So if the dark energy would have had a value different from what it has, the universe would have exploded faster than galaxies would have had the chance to form.
Right.
Slightly off. If they had been slightly off in the other direction, the universe would have collapsed in itself before the galaxies would have had time to form and planets and life. Now, if you look at all these parameters, and there are lots of them, they really need to be in a very close range. So there are two ways to solve it. One is to say, well, they were made that way. God, or whatever you want to call it, some power of nature created them that way. The other way is to say, look, there's an infinite multiverse. We can't live in a universe, one of these many universes, where the parameters are wrong. This is called the entropic principle, of course. We live here because the parameters for us are right here. That's why we choose to live in this universe, so to speak. We can't live in one where the galaxies collapse before they get formed. Now, this gets to a matter of faith. Do you believe in the multiverse? And as a mathematician, what bothers me is that multiverse has to have the cardinality of the continuum, because numbers live in a continuum. So mathematicians listening to me might argue and say, well, they can be rational numbers because you can always approximate any number with a rational number. So I'll grant you that, but it has to be a really, well, an infinite multiverse. You know what infinity is? I don't see too many things that are infinite in everyday life. So infinity alone, when it comes into the argument, and I've argued about infinity in different forms, allows you to do anything. A monkey will type Hamlet given infinite time.
Let me just remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Writing from PRI, Public Radio International. But isn't it, let me just argue for the sake of taking the other side, but even though it's infinity, isn't it possible, and scientists will say, you know, we just haven't discovered the answer yet. To say that God did it because we don't know or we don't accept a large number like that is not scientific reasoning.
Right. But then you should make those videos saying there's no God because science proves it, and books and lectures later on when you came to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Right now, the state of science right now is not at the point where we can say there's no God. We have no evidence. I'm not saying there is a God. But to say that science proves there is nothing that we can be called in the vague sense of somebody, somebody's idea that there is no God, I think that's premature.
I get you. Science requires data, right?
Yes.
There's not data to disprove.
Right.
That God disprove God's existence. Is what
right.
You're, show me the data.
Exactly.
That it does. That God does not exist. And you're saying, okay, you can make all these claims about God not being it, and you're not disputing that. You're just saying, well, where's the data to prove what you're saying?
Absolutely. Now, science won big against religion in the 19th century. You know, the young earth theory bit the dust with, you know, geological discoveries that the earth is very old, billions of years old.
Right.
And Neanderthal remains found all over Europe show that there are hominids that lived on this planet long before us. Lucy and so on in the 1970s, right. So beyond the 19th century. And Foucault's pendulum proved that in the 19th century, 1851, proved the world, the earth rotates. All these things were against the literalist approach to scripture. Scripture is probably wrong. It just is mythical. It has all these stories in it that don't mean very much. But to say that Spinoza's God, Einstein's God, some abstract God that created the universe is dead, it's premature to do that.
Well, you can judge that for yourself in Amir Axel's new book, Why Science Does Not Disprove God, by Amir Axel. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us today. It's always a pleasure to have you back.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it. And thanks for taking a chance on a book that's really different from everything else I've ever done.
Yeah, it certainly is. And we're not afraid to talk about the facts.
Good.
You know, we're talking about the facts, talk about the data. And that's about all the time we have for today. I want to remind you that our science club is active on the air. It's up there and running. If you'd like to join our science club, go to our website. We're making art machines. Go to sciencefriday.com/scienceclub for more information. And join us on the next Friday. Next Friday, we're going to talk about everybody's projects up there. And they are really some fantastic Science Club projects up there you're going to want to see.